This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Fake news, it's a phrase that's been thrown around a lot lately, whether it's a blatant lie or a manipulation of the truth. There's no question that we are susceptible to these alternative facts. But why is that? My next guest says it's because of a trick the brain uses to process information. Can anything be done? Well, a new study out this week suggests there may be a way to inoculate yourself against this, an immunity to fake news. Sandra van der Linden is assistant professor of social psychology at Cambridge University. And Dr. van der Linden, welcome to Science Friday.
Pleasure to be on the show, Ira.
Thank you. Also joining us is Anthony Lazarowitz, senior researcher and director of the Yale Program on Climate Change Communications. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Lazarowitz.
Hi, Ira. Great to be with you again.
You're welcome. Let me begin with you, Sandra. First, what is the brain doing that makes us susceptible to believing what we now call fake news?
Well, what I think is happening is that often we're heuristically processing information. And by that, I mean that we're often in autopilot. And so when we look at information on the internet, when we notice that a million people have shared a certain video or clip or news article, that sort of signals to us that it must be important. If everyone's looking at it, if everyone's reading it, then it must be worth sharing. And what people tend to do is just kind of share and reshare that information, and that increases the transmission of fake news and trying to sort of nudge people out of the state of autopilot and taking back control over the steering wheel. That's what we sort of tried to look at with this idea of inoculation.
Mm-hmm. Does putting figures in you know, the news, the fake news, give it any more content? Does that make it sound more reasonable?
Well, figures can be sticky. And so perhaps that's what the attraction is in terms of how people remember information. If you have an abstract paragraph about a topic, it might be hard for people to remember that, but figures tend to be sticky, and so they're easy to remember and also misremember.
Mm. Dr. Lazarowitz, so this study you did shows that there's a way to vaccinate ourselves against this, though, right?
That's right. That's what we seem to see, is that if you basically, it's very similar to the concept of inoculation or vaccines in the physical body. So we know that if you give the human immune system a short dose, a weakened dose of an infectious agent, let's say the flu, your body learns how to protect itself against that virus when it encounters it back out in the wild. In a similar, very analogous way, what we're finding, and this is actually built on decades worth of prior research, that if you give people a short exposure to a weakened version of the disinformation, it actually then protects their mind, essentially, from the effect of that disinformation.
And so if you then sort of give me an idea of what that would look like or sound like.
Sure. Well, in the course of this particular study, we were looking at a really important basic social fact, which is the fact of the scientific consensus that human-caused global warming is happening. We've seen that only about 15% of Americans actually understand that there is, in fact, this scientific consensus. And moreover, lots of prior research has shown that when you simply tell people that 97% of climate scientists have reached this conclusion, most people will change their own estimate of that consensus quite dramatically, like 20 percentage points. However, we also know that there's been a long-standing and pretty effective disinformation campaign for years trying to undercut and undermine that basic fact. And so what we did in this study is, first of all, tried to identify what were some of the most effective disinformation memes, if I can use that word, out there. And one in particular is one that's gone by the name of the Oregon Petition. It's basically this petition that supposedly was signed by 31,000 scientists, all claiming that human-caused global warming isn't happening. Well, to the uninformed, that actually sounds like, you know, what scientific consensus? 31,000 scientists signed this thing? That doesn't sound like a consensus. Until you learn that the signatories included noted Nobel laureates such as Ginger Spice of the Spice Girls, Mickey Mouse, I believe Adolf Hitler signed it, and, of course, the late, great Charles Darwin. So, and then further analyses have found that almost none of the signatories actually have a background in atmospheric science. But it doesn't matter, because the opponents have used that claim to basically try to discredit the findings of the scientific community. Mm-hmm. And I'll kick it over to Sandra to help explain exactly how the experiment worked.
Yeah, Sandra, please.
So basically, we had five different conditions, and we started with, in one group, we just presented people with the facts. So the fact that most scientists agree on human-caused climate change and that it's happening. Then in another condition, we just showed people the global warming, the Oregon petition, so the disinformation in this context. And in another condition, we paired the two together to see what happens when people are confronted with two different stories, one credible, the other not credible, if you will. And so what we find, if we just present people with the facts, then basically people shift their opinions in a direction consistent with the conclusions of climate science. When you just show people the false information, it has a negative effect on their perceptions of science and the scientific consensus. When you pair them together, the misinformation actually neutralizes, it cancels out the positive effect that the basic facts have on people. And so it's really that really tells us it's hard to communicate the scientific consensus in a way to the general public because of the nature of misinformation and the damaging influence that it has on communicating basic facts. And so in the last two conditions, we thought, well, is it then possible to try to inoculate people against misinformation to protect the effect, the positive effect that communicating the scientific consensus has on people? And then we had two conditions, sort of a brief inoculation, where essentially we warn people that there's politically motivated actors who use misleading tactics to try to influence people. And then in the more detailed inoculation, we debunked the Oregon Global Warming Petition specifically. And so we took a bit, just as Tony explained with the vaccine metaphor, we used a bit of the misinformation and pre-exposed people to that information, and then we debunked it with specific facts, mm-hmm. such as the idea that there's fraudulent signatories on the petition, the Spice Girls, Charles Darwin, et cetera, that only 1% of the actual signatories that have a background in science have anything to do with climate science. And so we armed people with specific facts that they could then use to build resistance against future exposures. And mm-hmm. in fact, what we find when we then actually expose people to the full dose or the actual global warming Oregon petition, people are more resistant to misinformation. Not to say that they were fully immune, but they were more resistant and less influenced by misinformation than before.
Let me go to the phones because we have an interesting phone call from a high school teacher in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Renee. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thank you so much for taking my call. First of all, I love your show, which I forgot to mention when you took my call a couple months ago, and
thank you.
I apologize for that. As I said, I'm a high school science teacher, so and in a rural district at that. So how can I take this study and help my students be better consumers of news, especially science news, because they're constantly plugged into their, you know, to their phones, and like you said, they see that 400 million people have shared something, and so they're like, oh, this is totally true. You know, I can't seem to make that connection of just because it's on the internet.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it's real.
All right.
You know, how can I use that in my class?
All right. Let me ask Cassandra. Anthony, any suggestions for her?
I'll take a quick stab at that. So first of all, this is what we did in this study is look specifically at could we inoculate against a specific false claim, and that's about the scientific consensus. But this same phenomenon, of course, plays out, if you will, upstream in the communication process when you think about sources. And so what I would strongly recommend to her is that you teach some of the basic skills of critical media literacy. As in, if you help students really take a moment and think about, where is this information coming from? Have I ever heard of this source before? Is it, you know, a credible source? Is it Scientific American? Is it, Science Friday, the preeminent source we should all look to trust? Or is it something you've absolutely never heard of before? That's a really important cue that can help you disentangle truth from fiction.
Mm-hmm. The sources, as you say, sources have always been very, very important. Of course, if someone is already... I'm staying with your inoculation metaphor. If you've already been infected by an opinion, if you have a definite opinion one way or the other, the inoculation is not going to help you already, is it? Or does it?
Well, that's an interesting question because essentially that's how the original metaphor was articulated. But in thinking about this, I think we're extending that metaphor with the current research in the sense that depending on the medical context, if somebody is already infected with a particular virus, then administering a vaccine can certainly make things worse. In some cases, this would be analogous to, let's say, a backfire effect if we're trying to inform people. But in other contexts, it can still offer incremental protection against future infections. And in fact, in the experiment, what we find is that the inoculation actually worked fairly well across the board for different political groups. For people with differing prior beliefs in the issue. This is not to say that it, you know, just as vaccines don't offer full immunization to everyone, and sometimes you need to go to the doctor multiple times in order to get the full vaccine, I would say that, of course, it doesn't work for everyone. But generally, we found that certainly it doesn't backfire with people who are predisposed to maybe have differing views on the issue. Of course, there are certain people that are never going to change their mind, and the vaccine probably will not be helpful to them. But certainly our research suggests that there is, especially among people who are doubtful, who are on the fence about the issue, who have not made up their mind just yet, that it can, in fact, be helpful, even if they've already been exposed to misinformation in the past.
I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us today. Sandra van der Linden, Assistant Professor of Social Psychology at Cambridge University. Anthony Lizarowitz, Senior Researcher and Director of the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication. Gentlemen, thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Ira.
You're welcome.